What was the other kid
tonight? I thought it was Ari Barofsky, my
friend. Welcome. Thank the sponsors, Daniel and Dina Jarashov, for sponsoring tonight.
Zev.
And Breshus, my parents, and Breshus Rosh Kolo, or Belzon.
Okay.
Just a few days, Chag HaShavuot is coming. The holiday is rapidly approaching us, and one of the centerpieces of the Chag for many is reading of Megillas Rus. It's a highlight for many. And it begs the question, why Rus? What lessons can we derive from this timeless tale? What lifeless lessons emerge? And how does it truly impact us in 2014? A nice story of a Moabite foreigner coming to the Jewish people. What does it do for me, 2014? So a little background information on Rus. The Gemara Nazir Chaf Gimel Amud Beis tells us that Rus actually descended from royalty. She was from Eglon, Melech Moab. She was royalty, and she left her native land and everything else behind. A parallel story to Avram Avinu, when he entered Eretz Yisrael. And she was a foreigner, she was from Moab, and she came to the Jewish people. And she accompanied her destitute and her elderly mother-in-law, Naomi, widowed, frail, fragile. She came with her, she persisted in taking that journey to Eretz Yisrael. And she provided sustenance for her mother-in-law. And the Malbim in Megillas Rus explains how she went about this. Very beautiful Malbim, explaining the exact details of Rus' kindness. Rus, like we said, was from royalty. She came from Moab. But nevertheless, she agreed, acquiesced, to go as one of the poor members of the communities to collect from the fields. The Kipeya, Leket, Shicha. She became one of the poor members of the community. Imagine a princess going out in the field in the burning heat collecting food. She agreed to go out. And not only that, she agreed to go solo. Why did she say, I'm Shvitzin, come along with me, Naomi, why not? Because Naomi used to be from a very prestigious family. With Elimelech, she used to be very wealthy, very honorable person. It would have been shameful if she went to the field. So she spared her that shame and embarrassment. She said, I'm going to go alone. And she took it to the next level. Says the Malbim, Rus was very under the radar. She didn't want anybody to really know who she was. She wanted to present herself as a foreigner. Why? So no one would know that she was providing for Naomi. So nobody would know that she was really slipping her food under the table. She wanted to preserve the dignity and honor of her mother-in-law. So she provided for her in the most dignified fashion possible. And Rashi explains, the way that she picked from the fields was very honorable. Why? She did it in a very tzanu, a modest fashion. She would never bend down to pick up the wheat. She always conducted herself in the highest level of modesty. Even when in the hot weather, picking fruits, picking vegetables, or the sheaves, always in a very tzanu possible way. And I believe that our day-to-day lives can resemble Rus. She's a relatable figure to us. Why? Because many of us go about our day scrambling to make a parnasa, to make a livelihood, going through our own fields, through our own heat, through our own challenges, trying to make parnasa, trying to make mitzen, trying to sustain our families in the most dignified, honorable way possible. And this is a story we could really relate to. Rus could be our hero, our role model of how to act in the day-to-day lifestyle. And what happened to Rus? She emerged as a legend, the ancestor of David HaMelech. She became the head, the ancestor of the future Mashiach ben David. She became it. She was the legend. So through her great sacrifice, her chesed, her tznius, she taught us a powerful lesson of the greatness of man. Koach ha'adam. It's great effect. They taught us, it fits well. She became great. Well, okay. Very good. Really is intense. So she became incredible. And that's the lesson of Rus. And that's perhaps what speaks to us in 2014. Every single year we read this Megillah to remind us how great we could become. And it's so crucial to remember the Koach HaAdam. We read in the beginning of Kedoshim, Kedoshim to you, you should become holy. And there's a fascinating medrash. If Chazal didn't say it, I don't think we'd have the audacity to say it as well. But here goes. Kedoshim to you, Yachol Kamoni. There was a Havamina. There was a thought, Kamoni, that what? We can resemble God in levels of Kedusha, in levels of holiness. Kamoni, we can be like God. Talmud Omar, the Pasuk comes and says what? Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokeichem. I, Hashem, am holy. Kedushati Lamala Mikedushatchem. My holiness, God's, supersedes your holiness. You heard correct. I'm going to repeat it, say it a little slower. It's mind-boggling, mind-blowing. Kedoshim to you. We would have thought that we are on the same level as God. We could reach godliness. We could be like God. A pasuk had to teach us, no, you're not just quite there yet. God's there, you're over there. We needed a pasuk to teach us that. And Rav Chaim Shmuelvitz in the Sichos Musar tells us to really take note of this medrash. It's extremely educational about the Koach Adam, the power of man. That there was even a thought that we could parallel the levels of greatness of God. Teaching us how great we could become, how exalted we could become if we could tap into that energy. If we'd be honest and look at ourselves in the mirror, we could reach tremendous levels of godliness. And the Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva tells us a required mindset for the individual. He says as follows, Lefichach, sarich kol adam, every man, sheyira atzmo kol hashana kula, ki'ilu chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayav. How should a person view themselves? What should be the proper mindset? You have to see yourself as an equal balance. Half merits, half guilt. V'chein kol ha'olam, chetzio zakai v'chetzio chayav. The world as well is equally balanced between sin and between merit. And this is where it gets beautiful. Chata chet echad, you do one sin, hare achriya et atzmo, that's kol ha'olam kul, l'chaf chova v'garam lo ashchata. You do one sin, one misdeed, you tip your balance and the whole world's balance towards the side of guilt, and you cause yourself destruction. Conversely, asa mitzvah echas, you do one good deed, hare hechriya et atzmo, that kolam kulo l'kaf zechus. You could tip your own individual scales and the whole world to the side of merit. The garam lo v'lahem teshuva v'hatzalah. You cause yourself and the world redemption and salvation. An incredible Rambam. This is not a Musar Sefer. This is a Halachic Sefer. Hilchos Tshuva. How should we view ourselves? Our actions have astronomical impact. We do one mitzvah, the whole world could be redeemed. We do one sin, the whole world could be toward the side of destruction. An extremely powerful Rambam that should resonate with us every single day before performing anything. Wow! I can literally tip the world scales. I was just at a wedding, and I wondered if a shared experience that many of us have. Have you ever noticed the following scenario? You had to drive out to Long Island, I apologize for Long Island, and you're exhausted, you know, you go to Crest Hollow, it's a long ride, you miss the exit 5 times, you're exhausted, and you get to the wedding. I've done that like 10 times. And you're exhausted, right? So you're dancing along sluggishly, lackadaisical, fine, doing your thing. All of a sudden, the camera comes onto the guy's side, and you're going crazy. All of a sudden, you're doing backflips, juggling, like, what happened to you? And you get Kate's on Meractim, and you look like Michael Jackson. You're like, incredible. You are the man. All of a sudden, you were half sleeping, you feel you're half coma, and then all of a sudden, you're doing backflips in the middle of the circle. What happened? The camera's on you. This is going to be remembered. You can't show up at your friend's wedding and you can see the video. You're going to be passing out during the dancing. That's not geschmack. So when the camera's on you, you got to be going wild. And we all done that. All of a sudden, you learned how to juggle. But I think that scene, which definitely happens to all of us, whether we admit it or not, but it does, you have to realize that the spiritual camera, so to speak, is always on us, is always on record. And the Mishnah in Avos tells us, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim, look at 3 things and you won't come to the hands of sin. Da malam malam mincha, know what's above you. Ayin roa, the odin shamat, v'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtavim. What's above you? A seeing eye, a listening ear, and all your deeds being inscribed in a book. And the Rabbeinu Yonah, explaining there, says the following. What does that mean? We have to view our lives as if we're writing a book. Our actions are writing a book every single day. Every action is recorded and monitored to the smallest, minute detail. And with that attitude, it prevents us from sin. But make it a more positive spin. If we really felt that our entire life was under scrutiny and monitor, how great would we act? So this mission is constant chizik. Our actions do matter. They're so valuable, so crucial in front of the eyes of God. And I think another eitz, another advice, how to attain koach ha'adam, tap into the greatness of man, to realize that our actions impact future generations. There's a great story, a well-known story, the Gemara Tanis, about Choni Amagel, Choni the circle maker. One day he was on the road and he saw an individual, and this man was planting a carob tree. And he asked the fellow, Choni asked him, how long does it take for that carob tree to grow to fruition? The man says, 70 years. Whereupon Choni responded, 70 years? Wow, you're ambitious. You're going to live another 70 years? Meaning you're going to see the fruits of your labor? And the man responded with timeless wisdom. He said, I came into this world and it was already located full of carob trees. And my ancestors, they planted them for me. They knew full well they would never see the fruits of their labor, but they planted it for me. I am going to now plant trees for my future descendants, for future generations. The Gemara is such a powerful essence, many layers to it, but on a simple level, we literally plant seeds every single day. We plant seeds not just for our immediate lives, for our kids, grandkids, but down the road, generations after generations, our actions have tremendous impact. And I want to tell a personal story coming on the heels of commemorating Memorial Day. My grandfather, my mom's father, Olav Shalom, was a sergeant in the American Army during World War II, a highly decorated soldier, recipient of the Silver Star Medal, a very rare medal to receive and then to live to tell it. And while he was in Germany witnessing the atrocities, he decided he wanted to keep Shabbos. And he didn't keep Shabbos at the local Chabad in Germany. He didn't keep it at a youth hostel or at a Shabbaton or even in a tent. Where did he keep it? In the foxhole. In the depth of a foxhole that he had to dig himself, which was very hard, he told me. How did he keep Shabbos? He needed wine to make Kiddush. It was illegal to send wine to the soldiers. Makes sense. So what did his mother do? She took a medicine bottle, poured out the contents, and substituted with wine. So she sent him a medicine bottle that really contained wine, and now he had wine. He was able to make Kiddush. But you gotta licht benching. You gotta light candles. So what did he do? He dug a hole horizontally into the side of the foxhole. Why? Because if the lights would be identified, you'd be a sitting duck to the German pilots, anybody ahead, and it would be only a matter of moments before he would be blown up, so to say it lightly. So he had to dig a hole into the side of the foxhole, put the candles into an empty can, and he did licht benching. And of course, scrumptious salami and some challah, and he had himself a Shabbos meal. And every time I hear that story, it's that story, by the way, if you ever go down to Philadelphia, he tells it himself in the Jewish National Museum in Philadelphia. He is one of three GIs that are recorded, his story, and he tells that story that many visitors could see and hear every single day. And that story is such depth to me. In the middle of Germany, in the middle of a foxhole, that act of Mesiras Nefesh, sacrifice, who would have thought what it could do to our family? And we know now what it did. For his kids, grandkids, now great-grandkids, a love of Shabbos, a Shomer Shabbos family. His dedication to Shabbos in the depth of the foxhole truly inspired generations to come. Sometimes, if we're fortunate, we're presented with an opportunity for instant greatness. It's knocking at our door, and we gotta go and grab it. The Gemara Sota describes the scene at the Yamsuf. Lo kachay amase, they're debating what happened. Zelmer ain't any yored techila. One tribe was saying, I'm not going in first. The Zelmer ain't any yored techila yam. The other one said, I'm not going in first. Every tribe was hesitant to enter the raging sea. Nobody wanted to be the catalyst. No one wanted to take the plunge. What happened? Said the Gemara Sota. Nachshon took the initiative and he took the plunge into the sea first. Nachshon's actions are recorded for eternity. He took a historic measure. No one wanted to go in. Everyone was hesitant. He saw an opportunity and he ran for it. Literally jumped for it. And this Nachshon story, the size of a beautiful tale, speaks to us now. We all have our own Nachshon moments. where we're wondering, when the seed in front of us, raging in front of us, will we take social action? Will we start the chesed initiative? Will we give the shir? Everybody has their list. But Nachshon taught us to tap into that energy. When it's a tough situation, when the sea's raging, to have that audacity and courage, heroism, to jump in. And we find a similar account following Chetah Egel. When Bnei Yisrael had unfortunately committed the terrible sin with the golden calf, to Moshe's horror and discontent, he saw the nation dancing and celebrating in front of this calf. And he knew that the perpetrators needed to be punished, justice needed to be served. So he called for all time those timeless words, those that give us the chills. Mi la Hashem Eli, who is to our God, come with me. And who responded? B'nai Levi, the only ones that came to the call. Because it was a very difficult task. They had to now administer justice to their own family members. They literally killed their own kinsmen, the Levis. And what happened? They were rewarded for all time for their heroic act. They replaced the firstborn, Sar to the Bechoros, and they became the chosen tribe, and they were then Zochet to serve in the Beis HaMikdash. At that moment, they heard Mila Shem Eli. It changed Jewish history forever in that one decisive moment. And like we saw with Nachshon, there are many, many moments, as the Chafetz Chaim, the story of the Chafetz Chaim says, you'll have many times of a Mila Shem Eli. Who is to God, come to me? Question is, will we take it? And I want to conclude with one final story. Rus inspires us for great stories. To tell the story of the young Maggid of Mezrich. The Maggid of Mezrich. He was just a young boy. Nothing like background music to the Maggid of Mezrich. And this is what happened. He lived in a small village. A fire erupted and burned his home. Whereupon his mother was devastated. Tears were streaming down her face. She was so distraught. Said, "Mother, why are you crying? It's just a house, some stones, some bricks, some mud. We'll put it together." Sure, it was a very humble abode. And his mother replied to this young boy, "I'm not crying because of the stones, because of the rocks. I'm not crying because of the destruction of our home. We could definitely rebuild it. I'm crying because there was a very valuable possession located in our home." What was that? A shtar yuchsin, a family tree. A family tree. We had proof that we went back to Rav Yochanan HaSamler, the great Tana. And it's known that Rav Yochanan HaSamler dates all the way back to who? David HaMelech. Back to David HaMelech. We are from royalty. Our family tree proves it. We're from royalty. And that's why I'm crying. Because our family tree has just been burned. It's devastating. Without missing a beat, the young boy responded to his mother, "Mother, I'm going to start my own family tree. I'm going to make our own family tree. No reason to despair." And that's exactly what he did. He was the disciple of the Baal Shem Tov, the leading disciple, and really from the Maggid of Mezrich branched off the different Hasidic dynasties. He started his own family tree. So to take it full circle, we asked, how does Rus, Megillas Rus, speak to us today? I think it's extremely relevant to show us the Koach Adam, the potential of man, her searching through the fields, through a very dignified way, chesed-oriented way, modest way. She became the ancestor of Mashiach. And to learn from the Maggid of Mezrich, to start our own family tree, no matter what our background was, no matter where we've been in the past, always have the ability to tap into that inner potential, to always remember, Kadoshim Tiyu, Yachol Kamoni, there was a thought, we reached the level of God Himself. To always realize the Koach Adam, there is no ceiling, and Bezrat Hashem, we could always tap into that energy and grow to greater heights. Shkoch. Yeah. Michael.